All right, looks like I'm live. How you doing, everybody? Ron Partey and Untold History, and going to kind of finish up part two of the the United States and Russia kind of changing places. But today is going to be a little different. Yesterday was really more about how Russia and specifically Putin was kind of like they're becoming Christian and criticizing the West for being satanic. Things along those lines, which doesn't sound so far from, I mean, you said it probably, 10, 20 years ago, you'd probably be laughing in your face, but, you say some of those things now and it's like, that's crazy. I'm reminded of a story. I don't know if I've ever told, if I've ever said this, I think I have, but I'm reminded of a story when I used to do, the gun shows. I came up with a design, like a logo of, it was the shape of California. And California was red. And in the upper left-hand corner of the state, it had a hammer and sickle. And obviously the insinuation there is that it, communist California. Well, for a long time, all I would do is I just sell them as stickers, right? And I was mow through those things. I couldn't keep them in stock. Everybody wanted one. And I'll never forget one day I was doing a show and this guy comes up and he says, "Oh, what is this? What is this?" And you could tell he wasn't from he wasn't like a native English speaker. He sounded to me like he came from someplace, in Eastern Europe. And he said, "This is, you like communism?" And I'm like, "Oh no, not at all. I'm just trying to tell everybody, this is me creating this to say that it's, it's here. It's like, it's a bad thing, And he says, "But yeah, there's no bad here. There's no like line through it or nothing." And I was like, "Yeah," I said, and I mean, he had a valid point. There was really no way for me to create that logo, in a manner that would basically make it to seem like it was an anti-communism message. Essentially, I was just stating it as a fact, as though that California had become communist in many respects. And there was no getting this guy to, there was no pacifying this guy. He was dead set on, this is not an anti-communist message. And I'll never forget what he said to me when he walked away. He looked down, he looked at that thing, and he looked back up at me, and he said, "You fucking Americans have no idea." And then he walked away. And I kind of felt bad, honestly. I felt really bad because, I as somebody who's an ardent anti-communist, I don't know, it was just kind of like it was kind of like a kick in the gut, if you will. And anyway, I don't even, to this day, I still, that actually still kind of bothers me in some way, because I'm so anti-communist. So, but anyway, I'm going to read some of this article today, but I thought that I would start off, about a 10-minute video from, Yoime Park, I think is her name. She actually escaped from North Korea and she's actually gorgeous. She's beautiful. And, she's very well spoken. Part of me wonders if it's like not a, I don't know the, if it's like, if it's real, I don't know, but, on the surface, she escaped communism and through China and made her way to the United States, seeking asylum. But it's a kind of a short video. It's a segment that was taken from an Epoch Times video. So I'm going to go ahead and play that real quick. Let's see here. Let me know if this comes through with you guys, if you guys hear it okay.
I went to Columbia University. And there, I was reminded by a lot of things that I saw in North Korea, what was happening in America. And Americans were not able to recognize those threats the way I could because they never lived in truly oppressive country. And for them was just maybe more just new phenomena. I don't think they understood what that really means. So I think the reason I wrote this book is try to wake up America to see the threats that are happening in the country and the tactics that are being used in America right now to control people were the same tactics the North Korean regime used to control us and enslaved us eventually.
I remember in our last interview, I asked you, you know, do you think it's possible for America to become like a North Korea? North Korea is unimaginable, right? It's unimaginable to most people here. You still think that's possible?
It's very possible. When I, living through the pandemic, that's when I really understood that America is not immune to oppression. This country can totally possibly become like China or North Korea if the individuals stop defending their liberty.
Let me dig into a few things here that I that really got me thinking. You know, one, you cite kind of lightly, without saying it, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, this idea that the line between good and evil cuts through every human heart. And you reminded me of back in 1978, you're probably familiar with this, he gave the Harvard commencement speech, right? Mm-hmm. Before that, you know, he had, of course, exposed the Soviet Union for what it was. He had won the Nobel Prize 8 years earlier. And he was this kind of hero out of a very despotic regime, and everyone understood this. But after this Harvard address, he wasn't so popular anymore.
Right.
You remember this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, wait a sec, you had me pull the Solzhenitsyn. What do you think?
I think that's what he did, right? I mean, his amazing work of exposing the true horror of the communism. But I think it's like that what he says, in every human being, there's no perfect angel or evil. Humans are capable of both. We were the ones that created Nazi Germany and put up human beings in the gas chambers. And we were the ones who were dying in the gas chamber. I think what makes us to do good is almost what kind of system that we are in. I think that's what I understand now. It's not that some people is born with a dark heart, gonna kill other people. That what Chinese regime did during the Mao, to killing their own citizens, starving them. And I think that's for us to remember that it's not some magically everybody gonna do good or magically everybody gonna do all bad. It's almost the system that we put ourselves into, and that system bring up which side, you know, it can bring out the good side and it can bring out the worst part. And us recognizing that, what it means to be human, I think that's very important.
Specifically with respect to this Harvard address, what Solzhenitsyn did was he called out the American elites, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the people running the show, everyone was expecting he would tell them how great they are and thank them for the people there for helping him and all this kind of stuff, right? He didn't do that. He said, yes, you know, of course you have some great things here, but I don't think I would wish your system on my home country, right? And people were shocked and stunned and wondered, you know, how could he? And I think that in your case, you could have very easily been very popular, going to the Met Gala every year. You know, you talk about that in this book, what a surreal that experience that was. But it's almost like because you chose to be a truth teller, that caused you some trouble.
Many. I mean, actually, you're saying that, like, I could be the darling of this movement of victimhood. You know, I'm a woman. I was raped. I was sold. And I can complain about all day how horrible men are. Because all the men that I met since I was 13 was all the rapists. I can totally make the case for the world that men are truly horrible. And actually, when I was trying to write my second book, there was a lot of people trying to force me to write that book. How hard it is to be a woman. Or write a book, how horrible America's treatment towards black men. And comparing to American prison system, to North Korean concentration system, to show how America is so brutally towards black men. And of course, if I wrote that book, of course, I'd be the New York Times bestseller list right now. And also, when I was trying to with my audiobook, we couldn't find a narrator. They would keep bailing out. Like, they would not want to narrate my book. And eventually, we got a lady, and she wanted to use a pseudonym. After we went, like, 11 people, I think, before. It was truly finding a narrator who just want to narrate the book. Not writing the book was a real challenge. And that's when I was thinking, people are afraid. It's a real shocking thing to see how Americans are afraid and not acknowledging they are living in a somewhat oppressive country. Of course, the extent is never going to be North Korea and China. I'm not even saying that. But we are on a path to there if we don't turn back, right? We're definitely getting closer every day, especially with the education system, especially current, climate where that, you know, they say your speech is a violence. And if you say the wrong thing and non-politically correct thing, they use you spread the hate.
You've dedicated your life, you say this, my life's purpose is to fight for human rights, especially for North Koreans, right? But I think it's broader. And so, you know, I think a number of the people at Columbia, where you went to school and many other places, that, you know, your cohort would say, I'm fighting for human rights. We need to be safe and you know, be able to be secure in our thoughts. We don't want to be exposed to dangerous things, right? So they might imagine themselves as fighting for human rights, actually.
They do.
What do you think about that?
I think I actually was studying economics for the first 2 years, and then for the remaining 2 years, I studied human rights. And I got the human rights degree out of my BA at Columbia. It was really shocking sitting in the classroom. The professors or students would say that healthcare is a human right. LGBTQ plus some rights is a human right, right? And universal income is a human right. In a way that what human rights meant for me became, I think that lost meaning currently. I'm so sorry to say that. I'm like, when people say I'm a human rights activist, that's not what I meant. The human rights, still what it meant for me is a right to pursue your life in a land where there is no infringement of your speech or your religion or your movement and your thoughts. It wasn't about me demanding the country giving me free education, free healthcare, free housing, free universal income. It wasn't about my entitlement. But in America, what it became currently the human rights meant is that my feelings rise over facts. That if I feel like a gender fluid, some unicorn or a cat, or you know anything in any kind of spectrum, then I have a right to be respected for that. I don't know even what to say, like it's a mental condition. I mean, it's a really bizarre time that 21st century, why you understand this much, science, that saying that men and women are different, you know, men cannot be a woman, is controversial. And for them, that's a human right. For them to be recognized as a fully man, as a woman, or whatever they are feeling. So it's what scares me. I don't know, you studied China a lot. Words doesn't mean anything. Those countries, they diluted the meaning of everything. That nobody understands what they're talking about. And the communication is extremely hard. And now I'm living through America, it's becoming like that. The words keep losing meanings. And there's so much confusion around it. And I think people really having a hard time to understand each other now.
So that was Yeonmi Park. So if you guys have never heard of her, she's given a lot of speeches. You can find a lot of her material on YouTube, small clips, big talks, things where she kind of talks about what it was like to get out of North Korea. In that video, you obviously heard that she was raped, but she made her way to the United States. Again, I don't know how she did all the stuff that she did, but you know, she's made a name for herself. I actually reached out to her to try to get her on to be able to interview, but all of my requests either fell on deaf ears, but didn't get any responses. But I did actually reach out to her several months back. like made multiple attempts. But anyway, so let's do this. This is the video that, or the article that I'm going to go through today. It's four communist escapees warn that America is becoming an authoritarian nation. And here are the four people. Let's see here. So I'm just going to just jump right in. Actually, I'm going to increase the font size here so that it can make it a little bit easier on my eyes. All right. As Russia continues its bloody assault on Ukraine and China cracks down on dissent in its own country, Americans can see just how lucky we are to have freedom and democracy in our land. Ugh, gag. But some who, and this is actually from the New York Post, which is actually a fairly conservative outlet for the most part. Anyway, but some who escaped repressive regimes to come to our shores fear the United States is now heading in the same dangerous direction as the countries they left behind. Having survived authoritarianism, they see ominous signs here: groupthink, cancel culture, and young Americans favoring socialism just as much as capitalism. Four foreign-born Americans share their concerns as a warning to fellow citizens. Hear our voices, said Amy Fan West, an immigrant from Vietnam. We are speaking the truth because we experienced it. And she actually lives here in Southern California someplace. Let's see. Amy Fan West resides in Southern California with her husband and three sons, running a small business and living the American dream. But the life she escaped as a little girl in Vietnam was truly grim. Born in 1980 in the small southern village of Rock Gia, Fan West saw brutal atrocities committed by Phan Van Dong's Communist Party. Her grandfather's brother was stabbed by a communist soldier for refusing to comply with orders, and people in her village were executed or buried alive for resisting the government, she said. The regime makes examples of people, and everyone knows they have to comply and obey. She said if they don't, they and their families will be killed. It's interesting because if you go and you listen to the video that I did with Armando, he talked in there about how they were, whenever like the leader was going to come and speak, that everybody had to leave their houses and go down to the park or whatever, where they could be monitored and listen to the entire speech. And it could be 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, whatever. It just, as long as the leader went on, they would be subjected to listen. If they left, they could be, they could be subject to punishment. The regime makes examples of people, and everyone knows that they have to comply and obey. She said, if they don't, they and their families will be killed. This is a picture of her when she was just a child. In 1985, her father brought the family to safety by stowing 4-year-old Amy, her three siblings, and her mom, then 8 months pregnant, into the bowels of a fishing boat, praying the children would stay quiet. It's a miracle we weren't found by the communist regime at their checkpoint, Fan West said. After heading out of their village, the family became stranded a few miles off the coast of Cambodia in the Gulf of Thailand. They ran out of fresh water after 3 days, but were rescued by the crew of a German oil tanker who brought them to a refugee camp in Thailand. Those are her parents. 1971. 2.5 years later, the Pham family was granted asylum in America. They moved to Huntington Beach, California to start their new life. The people graciously welcomed us here, she said, and we so appreciated America and all the freedoms we were suddenly granted. But now, Fan West, who is in her early 40s, says she sees a slow creep toward authoritarianism in the United States based on lockdowns, free speech suppression, and hypocrisy among elected leaders. I'm especially concerned about censorship, she said. If we don't follow the status quo, we get censored and silenced. As long as people can speak their minds, they can't be controlled. She also considers politicians who push socialist policies like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a threat to our civil liberties. With the rise of socialism, our country is in the beginning stage of communism, she said. It doesn't happen overnight. First, they say they'll take care of you, but I don't think people understand what a slippery slope this is. You guys want socialism? Are you kidding me? And this is a picture of her and her husband and their three children. Her concern led FanWest to try to make a difference by running for Congress in California, California's new 47th district. If elected, she would represent an area that includes Huntington Beach, the community that welcomed her family 35 years ago. I'm running because I can't see a future for my children, she told the Post. What happened in my country that I fled from is happening here, and I want to prevent it. Please listen to those who escaped communism and socialism. Hear our voices. We are speaking the truth because we experienced it, and we know there's no hope if we go down this path. And then this next one is Samuel Chu, who moved to the United States at the age of 12 from China. China is stripping freedom of speech from Americans right here at home. Samuel Chu, 44, was born into a family of activists in Hong Kong. His father, Chu Yinming, was a Southern Baptist minister who aided protesters in Tiananmen Square, built an underground railroad to help dissidents escape persecution and set up safe houses for political refugees. Chu grew up spending evenings in these hideaways with the dissidents. Those early days were important for me to understand what we need to take a stand on the side of those who are less powerful, Chu said. We should be willing to risk ourselves to help them. This is obviously him. At 12, Chu moved to the United States to live with extended family and, like his father, became a pastor and activist, forming the Campaign for Hong Kong and Hong Kong Democracy Council to bolster support for the city among American leaders and politicians. As a result, China issued a warrant for his arrest in 2020, accusing him of inciting secession and colluding with foreign powers. But Chu won't be deterred. I'm an American citizen. There's nothing they can do. Come get me. I'm not hiding. Still, he worries about China's influence interfering with our freedom of speech. He's seen entire American industries dependent upon Chinese businesses go silent on atrocities committed by the CCP for the sake of profit. He points to 2019 when then Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey tweeted his support of protests in Hong Kong, which resulted in hundreds of millions lost for the NBA, and a chilling message to players and team management to keep their mouths closed. Hollywood is under similar pressure from China, Chu said. A friend in the movie business lost her job at a film franchise after sharing an Instagram post celebrating his activism in Hong Kong. This is not just happening in Hong Kong. I want people to understand that it is happening right here, right now. It's already at your doorstep. I agree with that. Justo Triana, U.S. students don't understand socialism. He fled communism. He fled Cuba as a teenager. Justo Triana fled communism in Cuba as a teenager in 2019. But now the 20-year-old Syracuse University freshman is appalled to see peers on campus championing the same ideology that left him and his family struggling to meet their basic needs. Triana grew up in Camagüey, Cuba, during the communist reign of Fidel Castro. Despite coming from a middle-class background, his parents couldn't afford an air conditioner, let alone a car. Deodorant and toilet paper were hard to find, and non-tropical fruits like apples were considered a luxury. At school, Triana was compelled to sing the national anthem and chant Pioneers for Communism. We will be like Che Guevara. Each morning, they turned patriotism and the sentiment of homeland into a way to reinforce the communist line, he said. In 2014, Triana's father was granted asylum in the United States. 5 years later, drowning, his mother and sister joined him. I have so many new liberties now. Freedom of speech is what I have been most thankful for. The right to say whatever I want about the Cuban or United States government, he said. But he is shocked to hear classmates flirting with the authoritarian politics as if it were somehow heavenly. He said he's overheard students praising Cuba's free education and healthcare, but without acknowledging the country's decades of repression. They don't look at history, he said, and they don't ask people who have lived in those kinds of places. Triano worries that what will happen in America if the youth push the country towards socialism. I'm fearful about the future of the United States. I'm afraid that these kids will grow up, get jobs, assume positions of power, and ultimately turn the United States into another failed experiment. And before I go on to the next one, let me just kind of address some of the things that he talked about in there and why I don't necessarily think that that's coming. First of all, you do have an extraordinarily conservative group of young men and women in the in this next generation. I don't even know what the proper term is, but the kids that are like in elementary school now, it's not the ones that's the millennials. It's the generation after the millennials. Apparently, they are highly conservative and probably even one of the most conservative generations in American history, as I understand it. And they are not going to tolerate this shit. They're just not. And good on them. You know, I think the, I also think that the world is waking up. The world is waking up to kind of what's going on out there. And in a way that I think a lot of people are open to ideas, new concepts, and thoughts that they may not have otherwise been open to in years past. So I just don't think that a lot of that is going to come to fruition here. But before I go into this fourth guy, let me play. It's just like, I think it was like a 3 or 4 minute video of a guy. This is another guy who fled communism from Cuba. So let me do this.
Imagine if you had a beautiful garden and they walked over and smashed everything. That's the way communism is. It's like there is nothing that you can grow or flourish in or do that they don't control. You know, if it gets too high, they go, nope, you can't have that because the other person has to have it the same height. My name's Rafael Diaz. I've owned a few businesses here in this country. I have a hair salon now. I come from Cuba. I came here when I was right at almost 10 years old. My grandfather, very successful. He provided all the dairy for most of Cuba, like yogurts and the fruits and all that stuff, the ice creams. And he hired a lot of people, he had a lot of farms and stuff. They hated that he had what he had because he was a hard worker, so they want that. Everything you have, they want. The communists controlled everything. Every street has a comités. What they do is they watch everything. What you bring into your house, what you don't bring into your house, who you're hanging around with, and they report you if you do anything that's not according to their laws. And then you always get used up to the military with their machine guns. Sometimes at 3 in the morning, 2 in the morning, we would hear this bang on our doors. And I remember I would get up and I'm like, go back to bed, go back to bed, go back to bed. And they would be in there with machine guns, checking all our drawers, our house, to see what we had. You know how a report card has A, B, C, has different? It's like that. A might be rice, B might be a piece of meat, C might be toilet paper. So every month they check out what you get. And that's all you get. You don't get any more or any less. So if today you want to go buy you a steak, you don't get a steak. Sometimes I could barter. We would barter with people to get like extra clothes or extra things. We were able to do that. But, you know, that was always at a cost and a price. You could end up in jail for that, you know, which my father was in jail many times. I remember one time was for having too much fruit in the house because he had boxes of fruit because he had a business. They would put him in jail, and I said, where's Dad? Mama said, oh, don't worry, he'll be here later on. And they would let him out, but they do this to interrogate you. And schools were tough. The curriculum, the books would change to build up the communist, to build up Fidel Castro. You know, that this was good, this is good, this is not good, and all that. And then every morning you had to go and salute the communist flag. And then sometimes there were days that we would go home and then go back to school again. Because that's where they train you. They take your mind and they want to teach you the communist way. I remember my mom picked me up at school around 4 o'clock. I remember her telling me, we're going to go see the house one more time. She says, we're going to stay with your grandparents and then we're leaving in a few days to come to America. There was just a peace as soon as we hit that plane and we left. And I remember when we landed in America, where we landed, there was a 7-Eleven. Well, when we all looked, I almost want to go into tears with this. I have never seen so much food in my life in a 7-Eleven. And I remember the lady says, that's nothing. Just wait till you see a supermarket. You can do whatever you want in this country. If you want to work 24 hours a day and become a millionaire, you can. You can go to school, you can go trade school, you can go to college, there's just no limits. And you can do what you desire. If America started doing like Cuba, taking everything away, my rights, my desires away, what I want to do, where would I go? Where can I go? Where else could I go but outside of America? I just thank God that my parents were Christian people that believed in a godly way of life. My grandfather always said that communism would only last in America 24 hours. He says, because we will have such a war in America. He says, half the country will overturn. But Americans need to just realize what's going on.
Yeah, he's right. Americans just need to realize what's going on.
Thanks so much for watching this video. Be sure.
Sorry about that. Thought that I'd taken it away. Anyway, that's kind of the essence of the video that I did with Armando. You know, people need to realize what the hell's going on around here, because it is we kind of are on the cusp of some serious stuff. But again, I echo your sentiments, Yarn and Mel, talking about, you know, kids looking at their phones. I think there's, I don't know whether or not that behavior will ever be completely fixed. But, you know, I see all kinds of bad things happening. There was actually, it was a movie that came out not too long ago, with Mark Wahlberg, I think, and something about like vacation or like something that he was doing, like planning a trip or something. I don't remember what it was. It was called Family Plan or something like that. But apparently he was like a former assassin who had gotten away and was trying to live a quiet life. And then they found him and they are trying to kill him. And so he's trying to like get the family out, whatever. And I was just watching like a synopsis of it. And apparently what he did was he took everybody's phones and threw them out the window into a river as they were driving over a bridge. And the interesting thing is that they all had to bond, in the remainder of the movie, they all had to bond together without the use of their phones. And it was really quite interesting because they grew closer as a family. Of course, it's a movie, but, you know, but I think the principle is applicable to our situation. You know, you go to a restaurant and you see a family of three or four sitting down there and everybody's looking at their phones. You know, nobody's got their phone put away. You know, I anytime I go to lunch or if I'm with somebody else, I always do something where I put my phone down and I'm present at the table. But to your point, Mel and Yarn, that that is a very, very big deal. 1,000% agree with you on that. So so back to, this is the last one. This is the last one in this particular article, and it's a guy named Konstantin, and he fled the Soviet Union in 1990. And of course, when the Soviet Union in 1990, everybody still, you know, nobody realized that the Soviet Union was on the cusp of collapsing. So, because it didn't collapse until 1991. Konstantin fled the Soviet Union in 1990, but he says we're moving back in time to the USSR. Konstantin, a 58-year-old Russian immigrant who asked only to be identified by his first name, fled the Soviet Union in 1990 in pursuit of liberty. Today, he lives in Virginia and works in IT, but he's concerned about threats to freedom he's seen creep into American society over the last 30 years. Konstantin grew up sharing a two-bedroom apartment in Moscow with his parents, grandparents, and siblings. We were poor, he said, but everyone was. Everyone had the same salary, the same apartment. His lawyer, mother, and engineer father each earned a standard salary of 120 rubles a month, about $1.42 in today's money. Wow. His mother, who was a lawyer, and his father, who was an engineer, earned a standard salary of 120 rubles a month, which equated to $1.42 in today's money. Wow. I'm sorry. Forgive me as I pick my jaw up off the freaking floor. That's insane. His parents shielded him from their criticisms of the Soviet regime by speaking Yiddish when they talked politics. As a child, I was told not to even think about stuff. My parents were scared for me, he said. But as he got older, he started to have his own doubts about Russia. I started realizing how wasteful the system was. Generations of wasted people, he said. No matter what they did, they couldn't improve their lives. In 1990, when Russia began to open up under President Gorbachev, Konstantin brought his wife, Irina, and five-year-old daughter to Reston, Virginia, to start a new life with $270 in his pocket. $270, of course, that was a little bit more money than it is today in 1990, probably equivalent of about $1,000, but still not very much money. He described experiencing freedom for the first time. The light comes on and you can see things you saw in the dark and not quite the same as you imagined them. It was so colorful, limitless. But now, he said, liberties are coming under siege in America. Sometimes I feel like I'm moving back in time, back to the USSR, where leaders told citizens what they could read, write, and think, he said. They're limiting our ability to say things, to publish things. There is even censorship on their kindergarten level, where they're removing Dr. Seuss books. Today, saying something that doesn't align with the correct way of saying things could cost someone their job or their livelihood. He added, we're taking small steps towards the wrong society. This is the greatest country in the history of civilization, but it's built on the premise of freedom, self-reliance, and responsibility. It should stay that way. I concur with that. If you saw last night some of the videos, one of them they talked, Putin was in actually talking about strengthening the family, strengthening the, you know, the patriotism and love of God. And, that is something that is missing. That's basically what they took away from the United States, by design. You know, read, let me do something here. This is actually a good exercise. I just thought about this. Let's see. 45 goals of communism. Communist goals from 58 years ago, Ethan Allen Institute. Let me see if this is the one that I want to do. Yeah, actually, this is something good to do because I'm done with that article and I need to fill some more time. So let me put this back on stage. From July 2nd, 2021. On the founding of our nation's 245th birthday, it would be nice to set our eyes on the window displaying blue skies, but on another window displays storm clouds. Montpellier's decision to cancel any meaningful 4th of July recognition, along with our schools and our very own government promoting critical race theory and Black Lives Matter, tells us all we need to know about the ominous clouds both these Both these movements are Marxist in origin, with CRT being a derivative of the German Marxist Frankfurt School and member Max Horkheimer's 1937 essay titled Traditional and Critical Theory. And one BLM founder is on record stating that they are trained Marxists. Communism's 45 goals were read into the congressional record by Congressman Albert S. Herlong Jr., Democrat from Florida, in 1963. These goals were gleaned from the testimony given to Congress by scholars and from the writings of current or former communists. Socialism is seen, I want to say it was, I thought it was the 45 goals were highlighted in the book Naked Communist by, drawn a blank, but the Naked Communist is the name of the book. Let's see. These goals were gleaned from the socialism is seen as the bridge between capitalism and communism. The major difference between socialism and communism is the method of takeover. Socialism, or progressivism, believes that it can centralize all control of the individual, land, and industry by peaceful but gradual legislation. Whereas communism seeks a violent and final confrontation to eliminate all dissension to achieve its utopian goal of a stateless and classless society. But make no mistake, what is the same in all these ideologies is the desire to seize monolithic control of society. Mussolini termed this the totalitarian society, everything in the state, nothing outside the state, nothing against the state. In order to get a better understanding of our storm clouds, let's examine a few of the 45 communist and extension socialist and progressive goals that have been read into our congressional record. One, to capture one or both of the political parties in the United States. I think they've got both, actually. Get control of the schools and teacher associations, soften the curriculum. They've done that. Gain control of all student newspapers. They've done that. Infiltrate the press. They've done that. Gain control of key positions in radio, TV, and pictures. They've done that. Eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and press. And they've done that. Break down critical standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in the media. They've done that. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal, natural, and healthy. Infiltrate the churches and replace, I think there's a typo here. This should be number 9 and then all the rest of them. Anyway, infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion. That's actually happening right now. That's frightening. It's actually been going on for quite some time. I remember discussing that in the war on Christianity. Number 9, eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the grounds that it violates the principle of separation of church and state, which is a total horseshit because that's not what separation of church and state is about. Discredit the American Constitution by calling it inadequate and old-fashioned. Discredit the American founding fathers as selfish aristocrats and racists. It's exactly what they've done for a long time. Belittle American culture and discourage the teaching of American history. Discredit and eventually dismantle the FBI. I'm actually kind of okay with that one. Just saying. Actually, there's a lot of good people at the FBI, but you know, as an institution, I think it has gone to the dark side, at least at the higher levels. Infiltrate, because it was Skousen was his name. Cleon Skousen is the guy who wrote The Naked Communist, and he actually worked for the FBI. I think he quit the FBI to finish his book. Number 14, infiltrate and gain control of big business and unions. They've definitely done that. Mostly unions, but definitely big business as well. Transfer some of the powers of arrest from the police to social agencies. Treat all behavioral problems as mental health or social programs. Now, they haven't been able to achieve this. However, they've done quite a substantial amount by, you know, you remember after the BLM riots when they talked about, you know, defunding the police and wanting to have social workers go out as opposed to police, you know, to try to ease situations. So there, even though they haven't completely done this, they are working on that still. Discredit the family as an institution, encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. Emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. Repeal and repeal the Connolly Reservation, allowing the world court jurisdiction over nations and individuals alike. Let me look up the Connolly Reservation. Let's find a quick... Let's see if this says... the Connolly Reservation in March 1959, Senator Humphrey introduced Senate Resolution 94 to repeal the Connolly... I don't know. That's not it. I don't know what the comment... what that is. Let's see here. Let's see. This is kind of this is kind of how I research and study. So you guys are going to get to see it firsthand how I kind of do stuff. I don't know the Connolly Reservation and National Security. Mr. Over's thesis is that this is no time to withdraw the so-called Connolly Reservation. I don't even know what the Connolly Amendment to the United States Reservation to its acceptance of the compulsory jurisdiction of the World Court in 1946 empowers the United States and not the World Court to determine when matters should be excluded from jurisdiction because essentially within the domestic jurisdiction of the United States. This amendment allowed long-established parties, who was adopted by a 51-12 vote of the Senate. So apparently, the Connolly Reservation keeps it so that we can't. The United States is forced. Oh, the United States is under United States jurisdiction, not World Court. The Ethan Allen Institute's John McLaughlin and Rob Roper recently wrote the means employed by the state of Vermont to achieve these socialist ends. Woodrow Wilson, the early president over the only president ever to possess a PhD, wrote of separating politics from administration. Wilson saw politics as dirty and corrupting and saw administration as pure and scientific. Administration, and more specifically centralized bureaucratic boards and agencies operating outside the purview of the legislative body, is clearly Vermont's means to its socialist ends. To wit, Mr. McClary writes of the Vermont Council on Rural Development, Rural Development's recently released The Vermont Proposition as follows. Finally, the vision exhibits a glaring disparity between its enthusiasm for democracy and even greater enthusiasm for creating utter undemocratic regional administrative bodies directed by an all-powerful state planning office that would be responsible for the state statewide community and economic development and land use plans on a five-year cycle. Oh, five-year cycle. Yeah. Look up five-year plan. Just for giggles, watch, just do 5-year plan. And basically that's big history. 5-year plan is our centralized and integrative national economic programs. Joseph Stalin implemented the first 5-year plan in the Soviet Union in 1928. Most communist states and several capitalist countries subsequently have adopted them. So a 5-year plan is basically code for communism. Let's see. Presumably, you could still vote for governor, but that scheme looks to me more like a replacing local democracy with a huge, expanded, and unacceptable administrative state. Mr. Roper writes, in the recently passed Vermont legislation calling for a major expansion of state-subsidized childcare from birth to five-year-olds, titled Let's Grow Kids. In a nutshell, it seeks to replace parenting with unionized daycare directed by an enlarged centralized state bureaucracy. Finally, the recently passed Global Warming Solutions Act set up an unelected and unaccountable Vermont Climate Council to produce edicts, which do not have to be voted on by Vermont's legislators. Think of a construction scaffolding or scaffold covered a large building, that building representing our democracy or specifically our constitutional republic. Thank you for saying that. What they are doing behind that covered scaffold is constructing a new regime. That regime allied far more closely with the 45 communist goals than with the goals outlined in our Declaration of Independence some 245 years ago. God bless the United States of America as founded. And I'm not going to read all 45 goals. You guys can go look that up if you so desire. So, you know, I in that one video I saw the one video of Park at the very beginning when talked about Alexander Solzhenitsyn coming to Harvard. I was unaware of that, and I found that video right here. It's at the Alexander Solzhenitsyn Center, and this is so if you guys can't tell, this little thing over here, this is basically an app that I have that reads the articles to me. And it's, what is it right now?
Articles, essays, and speeches.
So it's at a 1.3 speed. So if I increase the speed to faster, you can see the time goes down. But I think I keep it on about a 1.3 to a 1.4 speed is generally where I go with it. A lot of times I can actually listen to it faster, but I get through a lot more stuff. But At a 1.2 speed, it's like, or a 1.3 speed, or it's like almost 22 minutes of reading. So that to me is a lot. This is a very, very long article. Like the article that I read to start was only like 5 minutes long. So this would take an enormous, this would probably take me an hour and a half to get through this, just with stopping and whatnot. But the address, it looks to me like the address is here, and it's like an hour long, and I may upload that to the channel. I think that would be a good exercise, you know, to let Alexander Solzhenitsyn talk, and maybe a good introduction to Alexander Solzhenitsyn would be the I think it would be the Jordan Peterson. When Jordan Peterson did a psychological profile on Alexander Solzhenitsyn when he was teaching up in Toronto, and man, that was a very heavy duty lecture that he gave, very masterful, you know, about the communist state and really kind of going into the dereliction of duty by academia for not you know, standing up for the truth, but actually, you know, going the opposite direction and actually pushing the lies. So, I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about Jordan Peterson. I like Jordan Peterson. I don't think there's, you know, he's got some controversial stuff that he thinks about, but whatever. As in terms of watching people dismantle, watching somebody dismantle arguments from a logical perspective and watching Jordan Peterson do it, it doesn't get any better. I'm not a big fan of Ben, what's his name? The dude from the little Jewish kid. I don't remember. Man, my brain ain't working these days. But anyway, he's, you know, even though I don't like him, I do like watching him, like, you know, answer questions from college kids where he just, Shapiro, thank you, Susan, thank you. I can't believe I forgot that. Way too much stuff going on in my head. But I love watching Ben Shapiro dismantle arguments. Him and, I mean, there's a number of people who go onto the college campuses and, you know, field questions from, you know, the audience, and they just, you know, they tear them apart for the most part. But Jordan Peterson takes it to a whole nother level, in my opinion. I love watching Jordan Peterson. I've watched him for hours at a time. So, but yeah. But anyway, well, that's kind of all I have today, guys. It's kind of lean right now, but and there's a lot of stuff going on. Yes, exactly. I agree with you, Susan, 100%. Tomorrow, I'm going to be doing the next episode of Europa. I'm going to be showing it on my channel here, but I'm also going to be presenting it on Odyssey. I now have an Odyssey account, and I'm going to be streaming it to both Odyssey. Actually, I'll be streaming it to Odyssey, to Twitter, and to Rumble. I'm sure Rumble will remove it, but the video file will be available on Twitter and Odyssey after the fact, as long as it stays there. So I don't know if Twitter will keep it up. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I absolutely know that that Odyssey will leave it up. And actually, Odyssey's growing on me a little bit. I kind of like Odyssey almost better than I like Rumble. And there may be a time when I migrate all the way over to Odyssey and just quit the Rumble channel. But I know that Rumble is where a lot of people are. But man, it's just, I don't know. I don't make any money off of this thing. I don't do this for the money. I do this because it's the right thing to do. You know, I have information in my head and I want to get it out to the world. So I don't have a huge audience, but I have a big enough audience. You know, I'm honored that I have like 15,000 subs roughly. I never in a million years ever would have imagined that 15,000 people would sub to something I did. It's just like, it's kind of crazy to think about. So, but I know I'm flattered and honored and humbled, you know, and all that stuff jumbled into one. I appreciate everybody in here, even the people who give me a thumbs down before the video even starts. Sapphire says Odyssey keeps force closing on my phone. What do you have, an iPhone or Android, Sapphire? Curious. And thank you, Susan. Appreciate you for saying that. I think I mentioned the other day that I got into a Twitter space, not this past Tuesday, but the previous Tuesday. And it was fascinating. I was in there for like 4 hours just talking about like World War II stuff. And it was kind of on the heels of the Mike King thing. And I don't know what iOS you're running, Sapphira. Sorry, I don't mean to be hurt, disjointed here. I have an iPhone as well. I've got a iPhone 15, and it's with the most current iOS. So I don't know what you have, but mine works okay. And I have an older iPhone 11 that I use from time to time. And it works okay on that. And I haven't updated that iOS. I think that iOS is like, it's the last one. It was actually like two or three previous, and then it like automatically updated one night. And I was pissed because once you update an iPhone, you can never go back. It stays that way forever. So I was annoyed. But anyway, you know, couldn't do anything about it. It was done. What was done was done. But anyway, another thing that I'm kind of thinking about doing, guys, I don't know if anybody has any interest in this, but I did that video with Jim Willey, and I kind of talked in there about my crypto stuff. And to be quite honest with you, I thought I was going to go back and edit that out, and I completely spaced. And I didn't edit that part out because I was talking about some personal numbers, and that made it out into the world. And I had like 400 emails of people like, hey, what are you doing with crypto? Tell me what it is and all this other stuff. And so, I know there's a lot of people who are interested in crypto, but they don't know what to do. And the service that I pay for with this guy is, I mean, it was not cheap. I was blessed to get in at a good time in like 2018, 19-ish time frame, and I caught the wave in time to be ready for the bull run in 2021. And I took a it wasn't a lot of money. It was chump change, but I mean I took, I don't want to say the exact numbers, but let's just say that I took a relatively mid five-figure number into a mid six-digit number. I said a low six-digit number, more accurate. But I didn't take any profits, and I let a lot of that stuff on and just sit on the table. And I didn't know what to do. I thought it was going to keep going up, and it didn't. So all that to say is that I signed up. I took the balance of all the crypto that I have left, and I signed up for this guy, and I'm following all his trades. And it's a complete departure from my belief in XRP and all this other stuff. So I'm contemplating taking the system that he's created and kind of doing like a, I don't want to say do my own, but it basically be modeled after his. But I got to be very careful with doing that, because I can't, you know, I paid a lot of money for that, and I'm not going to jeopardize that. But even if I revealed some of that information, 24 to 48 hours after the fact, after it's been put out, it's still early enough in the game that you can get in and get some, make some decent moves. So I just have to be very careful with how I do that, and if there's any interest in that, for people who want to do stuff. So anyway, that is just something that I'm kind of thinking about, and I don't know. I look forward to feedback from you guys. If anybody has any desire in that, let me know. It would be a complete departure from history, but I would bring a geopolitical and historical context to the background of the digital asset space going forward, as that most people don't. The only two people that I know of that really do that well are Rob Cunningham and Zach Rector. And both those guys are staunch XRP people, just like I am. So anyway, I don't know if any of you guys have any updates for that, but or updates or any desire to have anything like that. But that's just something I'm considering. So let me know your thoughts on that. So, but anyway, until tomorrow, where we'll be watching the, at minimum part, four of Europa. Everybody have a wonderful evening, and I will see you guys tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody.